Hello and welcome back to another week in the world of Angel Insights. This is the show that delves inside the world of all things angel investors to discover their tips, tactics and strategies when it comes to early stage investing. Now, I'm very excited for our guest today. She's not only a fantastic angel investor, but she's also a world-class operator too. Therefore, I'm thrilled to have Colette Ballou join me in the hot seat today. Now, Colette is the founder and president of Ballou PR, one of the leading European public relations firms that works with high growth technology and technology-enabled companies, as well as technology investors, of course. And Colette has worked with the likes of Facebook, WhatsApp, TransferWise, Eventbrite, Evernote, Axel Partners, just to name a few. And she's also an incredible angel investor alongside this incredible operational journey. She's mentored with the likes of 500 Startups and Seedcamp also. However, my praise for Colette is unbounded. Therefore, for the sake of your time, I'm delighted to hand over to the wonderful Colette Ballou at Ballou PR. Colette, a huge welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Harry.
Now, I want to start today with a bit of a synopsis on you and the founding story of Ballou PR and what made you make the move into angel investing yourself and mentoring.
Well, I'll separate out those two because they are two distinct things. First and foremost, as you probably know, Ballou PR is a European communications and strategy agency, and we work with high growth technology and technology enabled companies. And what I mean by that is, for example, Facebook and Pinterest would be technology enabled, according to us. And we also work with technology investors, venture capitalists and LPs. And that actually, come to think of it, includes people that you've interviewed in the not so distant past, like Beezer Clarkson of Sapphire Ventures.
Love Beezer.
Oh, love her to pieces. Fred Destin, who's now with XL Partners. Christian Hernandez, I think you've also interviewed with White Star.
Basically, there's very few VCs I haven't interviewed. So yes, roll them all off and I will say yes.
This is true. And we have offices in London, Paris and Berlin, and the team's done pretty things that I am completely over the moon about. We've helped a French company called MusiWave exit for $100 million. This was back in 2004, 2005. And that at that time, it was one of the biggest European exits for a company. And we've done things like helped Facebook and Pinterest enter into France, and TransferWise and Flipboard helped them enter into Germany, and Twilio, which of course has recently been in the news, and Eventbrite enter into the UK. So we've had the joy of working with great companies. We don't so much work with startups as we work with companies that are high growth. And folks that we've worked with or continue to work with include people like, you know, Accel, Lakestar, AOL, Box, Stack Overflow, Waze, WhatsApp, Yelp, Zendesk. So a lot of folks that you and your listeners will recognize.
Now, this sounds terribly antagonistic of me, but I'm intrigued.
No.
I'll ask it anyway because I'm an interviewer. But when you come to companies like that and those incredible clients that you mentioned, do they not have their own internal PR agencies and firms and individuals to deal with their own internal comms?
Well, I mean, they usually have folks inside, but they need people on the outside to help them. So, Facebook to this day, they're no longer a client. We help them get up and running and basically work on their monetization strategy from 2008 to about 2012 in France. Sometimes they come to a point where they actually do take it all internally. But most of the time they do need agencies. I mean, even the biggest companies like to have agencies, not so much arms and legs, because that makes it sound like all we do is tactical. In fact, a lot of what we do is we bring our knowledge of the market to them. So for example, with AOL, we do a lot of their ad tech, and most of our job is to understand how the media is changing, how the media attitude towards ad tech is changing, and how they should be talking about themselves, presenting themselves, really that intersection of where their business goals are and what's happening and what comms can do for them overall to help them with that. And sometimes it's helping them get the best recruits. Sometimes it's helping a company raise funding. So PR communications can be used for all those different things. And it really depends on where a company is in its stage. I don't know too many companies, with the exception of Apple, that have everything completely in-house and do not rely on outside agencies. Frankly, that's the only one I know of.
And then I'm intrigued, how did it transition from that and helping all kind of hyper-growth companies scale into the behemoths that they are? But how did it go from that to mentoring and then investing in startups?
A little known fact, I'm a veteran of the ecosystems of New York, San Francisco, France, UK and Germany in that order. So I've seen a lot of companies. I've seen a lot of ecosystems at different points in their development. So being in Berlin, starting at the in 2012, has been amazing to watch that just cycle up so incredibly fast. I was in New York when things were pretty dead, quite frankly, and trying to watch it get started. And in fact, it didn't take off until after I left. And that's an interesting coincidence right there, isn't it?
I guess that's an interesting one. What's the catalyst for an ecosystem to start? Is it one massive exit that spurns further?
It can be. But actually, this is a second level. So in Berlin's case, we're kind of waiting for perhaps SoundCloud to exit and create a lot of wealth. Of course, Rocket Internet has gone public, but that hasn't created a lot of wealth for people. That's created a lot of wealth for the Somber brothers, but it hasn't created a lot of wealth for other people to go out and make money. On the other hand, Delivery Hero has gone out and created millionaires, and a lot of them are staying in Berlin, and now they're investing. So, you know, what starts at the very beginning, there just has to be a lot of chutzpah, a lot of creatives. I actually find that creative, where artists have been, usually is where a startup community will flow in. At least every example, save Silicon Valley and San Francisco. But if you look at New York, you look at France, you look at UK and at Brick Lane and East London and now Berlin, and in Berlin, you see that where there's an open mindset, usually entrepreneurs can come in and build something because it's kind of everything goes. People are taking chances. So, and your question, to get back to your question, I have seen a lot of companies over that time, some that I really wish I could have invested in. For example, I saw TransferWise when it was going through Seed Camp. I saw a pitch for SoundCloud back in 2007, and I wasn't in a position to invest. But so I've seen a lot, and I've made note over time over these things. I've also done a lot of mentoring. So I work with Seed Camp, Techstars, and I'm a mentor for 500 startups. And then finally, one of the things that the whole Baloo PR team holds dear is that we really feel that super early stage startups shouldn't be paying for PR. So we decided to be very open source about it. We give seminars about how they can do it themselves, and we've actually titled it "For the Love of God, Don't Hire a PR Agency," which does get a lot of laughs, but it also does a lot of good. We really think that we should try to level the playing field and try to help companies, startups, get the attention, know how to get the media attention they need. And along the way, I've gotten a lot of exposure to companies. So, basically what happened is, in being there and kind of maybe giving a little good back into the system, I ended up meeting people and talking to people. And now I have deal flow from people who range from like Christoph Mayer to Joanne Wilson.
I love Joanne. I had her on the show recently, actually. Yeah, no, amazing.
What's not to love about her?
She is great. But no, because there we said about don't hire a PR agency. And I'm intrigued in the kind of proliferation of content that's put out today as marketing material. Is contrarian attitudes the way to go to differentiate yourself in this sea of content that's put out now, do you think?
It's not, if it doesn't come from the heart, it's no good. So it really has to be something that is a part and parcel of your company. And if we worked with a company called Seatwave for a long time, and they do ticket touting, which for some reason, the British think is second only to murder, in terms of crimes. But the fellow who started it, Joe Cohen, who continues to be somebody who I admire deeply and whom I get deal flow from, he honestly believed that he was bringing, and he was. He had an honest company, and they were just trying to keep people from ending up with counterfeit tickets. I mean, ticket touting is going to happen. It's just what happens. But, how would you like to, would you rather work on an open platform knowing exactly what tickets you're going to get, and a trusted platform that if for any reason you end up with something counterfeit, they'll reimburse you and take care of you? Or would you rather deal with meeting somebody in an underground car park and not really knowing what you're getting? They were always taking contrarian opinions because it was at the heart of their business. You shouldn't go around saying, "Oh, I don't believe in that," just to get the media attention, because you will be found out eventually. It needs, all communications needs to come from the heart of the company and the heart of the management team and the founders.
So I'm intrigued. When we go back to the start of your then investing career as well, what did the strategy look like for you? You had the deal flow from fantastic sources. So how did you approach it in terms of check size, kind of domain expertise? Were you only investing in marketing technologies, PR startups, or did you not at consumer facing startups? What was the thesis?
So it was so interesting that you asked that, because I've run this past my other angel friends, and I was really surprised to find out they didn't do some of what I did, which means either I am mad as a hatter, distinctly possible, or I'm really onto something and time will tell. So I have a couple guidelines. Number one, I set a budget every year, and most people don't. I don't know why they don't, but I set a budget. I just know here's what I can spend. I also don't spend, I do not invest money that is my nest egg. When I work with an entrepreneur, they have to know that they are not responsible for the well-being of me and my family, and they are being entrusted with that money. It has to be money that I am willing to say goodbye to. Not in a cavalier way, but they can't have that burden of knowing that if I don't get an exit, I'm, you know, not going to be able to take care of my mother, you know, or whatever. So, I also work with people who I've known before. That is one of my number one rules. It will probably change as I do more investing, but right now I do have a full-time job running Baloo PR. So I don't have time to do massive due diligence. So I only work with folks I've known before. Finally, I work with companies where I bring more than just PR expertise. I get approached a lot because folks figure, oh, we're going to get free PR activities. And actually we have a rule. Baloo PR does not work for any of the companies I invest in. We consider it a conflict of interest. So they have to be willing for me to, I'll give them guidance, but you know, we're not going to be writing them press releases. The team just won't, the team doesn't want to be in that situation. And we, you know, we thought about it carefully and we figure it doesn't make good sense. So they need to want me for other reasons. And I've grown and built international companies. You know, I have done it completely on my own. I'm still the 100% shareholder of Baloo PR. So I haven't gone out for venture capital funding. However, I've made it my business to understand the angel and VC landscape. So another thing I usually bring to the table is I help them with their follow-on. I introduce them around. I'll help them with around if they're bringing in angels, and then I'll help them with follow-on. So those are the kinds of things that they have to want me for beyond the PR side, mostly internationalization, also how to grow a great culture, and finally my ability to help them get follow-on.
And you said about deal flow then coming from people you know, and I guess, you know, certain people bring different credibility. You know, your Joanne Wilsons of the world, when you look at her incredible portfolio, you'd really take seriously one of her recommendations. So yes. Intrigued, what are the other aspects which give credibility to a reference for you in terms of, is it domain expertise, is it and connections? What is it for you that makes you think, okay, I really need to pay attention to this co-investor?
You know what? It's not even co-investors. I mean, the co-investors, you know, I know and trust, and we've built relationships over years before I even was investing, right? So I knew all these people, you know, for in some case 10 or more years. When it comes to actually, and sometimes I get cold pitches, and I do take a look. It's just, you can get a feeling, right? You can get a feeling from something. I'm a writer by trade. And when somebody writes something to me that makes sense, even if English isn't their first language, I get a feel. And, you know, if I'm intrigued, I'll talk to them. And I'm also pretty good at quickly figuring out whether I trust somebody or whether, you know, it's actually almost, do I trust them? Do I think they can do it? The idea, you know, I haven't hit on every perfect business idea at all. And I might not even recognize an absolute winner when I see it, although I have seen a couple and gone, that's it. Like, you know, TransferWise, again, as an example, I just took one look at that and was crazy for it. But, you know, it really depends on you know, on the approach. So it's not so much a co-investor. It doesn't have to be Christoph Mayer or Joanne or anyone. It can also just be the founders themselves pitching, and you get a feel. Can they do it? Can they not do it?
And we mentioned Christoph and Joanne there, and two investors with big brands. And so I want to talk about the brands themselves behind investors now, or I should say probably in front of investors. And we've seen kind of the increasing personalization of investors and VCs. And so I'm intrigued to see what you think of this evolving landscape, whereas before it was obviously all backstage, now it's very vocal. So how do you view this transition?
Oh, I think, first of all, I think you're dead right. VC investing is basically a brand game. And what has happened, you know, with regards to VCs, there are clearly a couple that have truly fine reputations, and it's usually a founder's gut reaction to go after these because they are their brand names. And, you know, one of the things I tell my founders, whether they're actually my portfolio or people who are seeking advice from me, is that they really have to look at the GPs individually. A couple reasons why. There are some truly outstanding GPs at places you would not consider first tier, but they are amazing people. You have to think about who's going to be sitting on your board, right? You know, Accel is a wonderful company, but there might not be the right GP fit for your company. So what I urge all of our, you know, my portfolio, the Baloo portfolio companies, when they're looking for a next round, is really do your research. And in particular, find out how the GP has acted when times have been tough. So if they had to force out a founder, how's that gone? You know, talk to the founders. You know, if they had to even, you know, completely close a company down, that is the true test of a GP. So my advice is twofold. Don't be blinded by the brands, because there are not even diamonds in the rough. There are diamonds out there in what you would consider tier two or tier three partnerships. And find out how they've been when times have been difficult, because that is the only measure. It's easy to be great and take people out to steak dinners, but have they been amazing in difficult times? And finally, you know, operations. One thing we're lacking in Europe is there are very few general partners who have had true operating experience. And it's actually a pet peeve of mine. I have sat in board meetings where I have, much to my shock and dismay, and then to hilarity, heard a GP say, "Oh, what you need to do is increase sales." And I'm just looking at them going, "Oh, really? Is that it? Oh my God. And next you're going to tell me that margins are important. Duh." You know, no. How do you build a sales channel? How do you, you have to help the founders realize that, okay, look, this, you know, you're going after Coca-Cola, but they're not calling you back, or it's taking them, you know, it's going to take them months to even get you close to a decision maker. So stop putting all your effort against that and go after these smaller deals, you know, get them in, get this recurring revenue in so that you can spend time on this big thing. There's all these things that only somebody who's been operational can understand.
I'm also intrigued. How do you think you can balance the brand with the personal brand with the VC brand? I think Fred at Excel does it very well in the way that he kind of...
He always has. He's always been puckish wherever he's been. But I think, you know, it is a problem. And I think that having one star or one spokesperson in a VC firm doesn't work for the media or even for the firm dynamic itself, because that can create jealousy. Even in some cases, you'll see a firm say, "Oh yeah, that's fine. You do the blogging, you go do the conferences." I've always seen it. We have a lot of venture capital clients at Baloo PR. So I've seen it backfire terribly. At first, it seems like a good idea, but inevitably, there creates jealousy and imbalance within the partnership, which you don't want. So what we do is we sit down with our clients and we actually create a tableau. We say, all right, you know, here, you know, we get the GPs, and if they will allow us, the principals and the associates together. And we say, right, let's divide this out by domain expertise. You know, who's the go-to person on which subject? And then who a backup person is for that. So for example, you might divide it up along verticals. This is the SaaS person. That's the IoT person. You can also divide it up along operations. You know, this person knows how to build a sales team. So this is, you know, she's the saleswoman. This is the marketing guy. You know, his expertise is marketing. And that way we build the reputation of everybody at the firm. And I really recommend it. Any investor should know, whether they're an angel or a GP, what their expertise is. And in a partnership, you should be quickly dividing out who talks about what, because, you know, then it also means that, you know, everybody has their responsibilities. So, you know, only, you know, certain people are going to this event, people are talking to that media, you know exactly who to call upon when there's an opportunity.
I'm very interested. I had a guest on the show the other day who said to me, "The coin box that rattles loudest has the least coins."
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Don't know what that means. Okay, so it means the person who's making the most noise in the ecosystem actually has the least to say and the least value.
I don't know. I mean, it might just be that they've organized themselves really well and they can communicate. I mean, I don't think that works for Andreessen Horowitz.
Would you say that VCs are turning into content production houses?
I'd say some of them are. You know, some of them are. You know, as I mentioned, we've worked a lot, and we've talked to many of them also. And in some cases, we've said, look, PR isn't right for you. It's against who you are. You know, we've all spoken with VCs, and I can't name anybody, but they're, you know, I remember these conversations so well, where they very rightfully wanted to, you know, bring us in to work, you know, with their portfolio, or some of them have wanted to stay out of the media. They just don't want to talk. You know, can we help them just turn everything down without creating anger and disappointment? So not all of them have. And you know, for the ones for whom it's natural, it's a great idea. You know, Fred doesn't do enough content, as far as I'm concerned.
I spoke to him about this. He does plan to. I think
he's a busy man. He's got a lot going on. But he doesn't do, he's, I remember years ago, he's the one who coined open source VC. This is when he was at Atlas. And I just remember when I read that going, right, you know, that's exactly what we need. That, you know, and, you know, and from that spirit, you know, you have a lot of people who should be creating content and who aren't, you know, who are just brilliant and, you know, don't have the time. And that's just the way, you know, the partnership is structured. You know, they have a day job. It's to go out and make great investments and grow those investments. Marketing comes second. And sometimes they're not comfortable with it, or only one person in the partnership is comfortable with it. And again, that can create dissonance.
And I want to dive into a quick fire round now. So I say a short story. Okay. How does that sound?
Fine.
So let's go start with one of my favorites, which is your favorite book.
Oh my God. There've been so many books over. I'm supposed to choose just one.
Yeah.
For investing.
It doesn't have to be actually, it could just be your favorite book. Yeah. Let's leave it as general.
You know what? Okay. I have to say right now, my favorite book is History of a Pleasure Seeker by Richard Mason.
Why is that?
You gotta read. Well, number one, I've invested in him, and he's an award winning novelist. I think he started his first book when he was 16. I think it was published when he was 20, when he was at Oxford. I think he's brilliant at studying people. He surpasses me, and I thought I was really darn good. So that is my current favorite book. But there have been so many over the years. I mean, I only recently got into fiction again. I've been a huge nonfiction fan, so I especially love reading the history of cities. I'm currently reading a book called How Paris Became Paris. But I love reading the history of any city, because I'm always fascinated with why it is the way it is. You know, I also, you know, way before the musical came out, read Hamilton, I'd like to say. I read that first. I read it way before Lin-Manuel Miranda read it. I love biographies and histories. I just think it's fascinating to hear the stories of people. So read Hamilton, read the history of George Washington. I'll read even off the wall things like, sometimes I went through a silent film thing where, so I read the history of Theda Bara. I mean, just really random stuff. Rudolph Valentino. I mean, stuff that nobody in their right mind reads.
Then the most common mistakes you see startups make, what is it that they're...
Not focusing on sales. If you don't sell anything, you can't, you know, I mean, especially right now when we're seeing kind of another drought coming, you have to figure out what you're selling and to whom and how to get to them fast. It's so basic, and it's what drove Baloo PR. I mean, the beginning of Baloo PR had me sitting alone in a garret apartment in Paris, cold calling and cold emailing, doing my research, knowing, you know, why they needed what we were selling, and setting it up and making it irresistible, making it absolutely impossible to ignore the contact, because I was so spot on with the problems I saw and how communications could solve it. Exactly the same for startups.
What's the best advice ever given to you? Another tough one.
Two, nobody likes a messy cap table. So that's number one. Number two, don't let anyone ever mess with your margins. You know, that's next to sacred. Everyone's always asking for a discount. They're asking for work for free. The advice that was given to me in particular was never give away your time. Don't discount the advice is this. Don't discount your rates. Give away free time when you see fit. But never discount your rates. Once you start discounting your rates, it's a slippery slope.
And then what about the most challenging element for you today in your role running Baloo?
You know, I have a motto, which is hire great people and then get out of the way. Hiring great people, happily, we've been able to attract them, and just getting even more and more out of their way. Also balancing. I am... the head of Baloo PR, and I'm also angel investing. So really just balancing out that time and carving out time to be creative. And I know this sounds like every top list of, you know, advice for yourself. You really do. If you do it right, you know, the angel investing gives me ideas about the business. Baloo PR gives me ideas about angel investing and how I can help my portfolio companies. And I'm incredibly hands-on. And I also just think that, let me restart just a quick second. The most challenging part of my role is hiring the great people and then getting out of the way. I've been learning how to get out of the way and how to let people run things for years. And I think I finally struck the balance. And when I get out of the way, that allows me to go and do other things that can then feed back into the business better. So the more hands-off I am at Baloo PR and not sticking my nose into day-to-day running of accounts, which I don't do, the better I am at, or the more time I have to go and angel invest. And when I go and angel invest and I sit down with my portfolio companies, the lessons I learned there, I'm often able to reinvest into Blue PR and vice versa. And that's, hitting that balance has been very hard, but it's been incredibly rewarding.
And then penultimate question, and one I'm very intrigued by myself, is with the rise of Twitter, does it make, and kind of the frictionless and ease of it for any of your clients to tweet whatever they want, does it make PR infinitely more challenging?
Well, especially if they tweet something insane.
Yeah, if you've got Mark Andreessen as a client, I mean, it's a nightmare if you're his PR. So how do you approach
this? Well, you don't know if that is carefully orchestrated, Harry. You don't know.
It's a very good branding exercise.
It could be, it's Twitter. I always liked how Twitter opened things up and made things a lot more democratic. It used to be that communication from companies went one way. They communicated to you. And I think it's wonderful that there's been a happy back and forth. I'm really excited, actually, that there's been a happy back and forth, because I think it makes companies far more responsible. Yes, it absolutely opens up problems, but on the whole, I think it's for the best. It does make it more challenging, but it also can make it, the communications are far more rich and meaningful. And that's what I like. I mean, I think every single one of our portfolio companies has its own, personality and integrity. And, you know, Twitter is the kind of thing where if you use it correctly, not just, you know, use it for company purposes and send out links to all your press releases and humble brags or just outright bragging. I think it can really bring a wonderful personality to the founders, the management team, and the company itself.
And then I want to finish today on your most recent angel investment and why you said yes.
So my most recent angel investment is Orson. And I had just mentioned that to you. It's a software company. And the entrepreneur is the author I mentioned, Richard Mason. And frankly, I've met many, many, many entrepreneurs. I took one look at him and knew this fellow can do anything. He will just get it done, and not in kind of a maniacal, crazy way, just with calm and poise. He knows what he's capable of, what he's not capable of. He's incredibly aware of his strengths and his weaknesses. He knows how to go and hire for those weaknesses. And again, like me, to get out of the way. And he's also incredibly good. And this is something that a lot of founders miss. He's incredibly good at using his network. He knows exactly who his network is and how to call upon them appropriately for this, that, and the other, for introductions. You know, I had advised him to go attend the Founders Forum in London 2 weeks ago. He found a way to get into it. I mean, the man is just unbelievable. And, you know, I honestly think he could, you know, he could have come to me with a business plan that was selling ice to Eskimos and I would have invested, because he's that good.
Well, Colette, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. I was really excited for the interview. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Harry, it has been a pleasure.
I have to give another huge hand to Colette for giving up her time today to come on the show and sharing her incredible and inspirational journey with Baloo PR. And if you love the show, then you can find more resources on www.syndicateroom.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Syndicate Room. As always, we're so grateful for all your support and look very forward to bringing you next week's episode.